Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they've watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son, Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. Maybe I should have called you Samwise.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's a joke.
Good evening, Samwise, but given that it's taken us four takes to get the introduction, I didn't want to ruin it.
Behind the scenes there, yeah.
Just revealing how it's made. It's like seeing the sausage made, isn't it? So how's your week been? Good?
Yeah, it's been all right. Yeah.
Anything you want to share with our listeners about your week?
I actually do have something to share.
Oh, good heavens. I'm going to let you do it as well.
At work, there was an archive room called The Dungeon, and I thought, that's got to be a joke, right? So I went down, and it's terrifying. I'm scarred for life.
So there's an actual room at your work called The Dungeon?
An archive room, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's an old squash court, but it's like so underground that it's actually terrifying. I think you could shoot a horror film there.
Maybe you could. You could call it The Squash Dungeon, or The Dungeon of Squash.
The Dungeon of Squash is cool. But it was legitimately terrifying.
Oh, well, I'm really sorry to hear that you've had a terrifying week.
Me too.
Well, moving on, we've had quite a lot of emails in response to Monsters, Inc., so thank you for the people that have been emailing us. Had a couple of emails from the United States of the Americas, and they've all really said that Monsters, Inc., open bracket, incorporated, close bracket, is Monsters, Inc. It's like,
oh, okay.
It's just a thing. So it would be unusual for somebody from the United States of America to look at the word inc and say incorporated. So right. I think we've been able to answer the question. So thank you to our listeners from over the pond there that have cleared that up for us, because I've had sleepless nights over that.
Really?
No.
I had sleepless nights over a monster coming out of my closet.
I'm glad you've asked me that question, because that is a lovely segue into our listener question, which comes from Oslo in Norway, Torsen. As emailed from Oslo in Norway. I didn't realise we'd gone that far, but so thanks very much, Torsten. I appreciate that. And his question is very simple. Other than Mike and Sully, et al., what is your favourite movie monster?
I'm not going to address the Cloverfield in the room.
Let's not do that.
No, I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know if I've ever really had a favourite monster, because it depends on what the monster is. Because, like, is it a good monster in the terms of that it's scary, or a good monster in, I like that monster, is very clever?
Yeah.
Do you understand that?
Probably, I don't know if I have a favourite movie monster. Possibly something like Godzilla. You know, I mean, although I wasn't that keen on the movie,
I think
the actual, or at least the movie that we talked about, there are some good Godzilla movies out there. So maybe it would be Godzilla, because, you know, that's at least a little bit nuanced and there's a character involved. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think somehow I'd managed to forget Godzilla, but it would definitely be Godzilla. Oops.
There you go then. And then there would be other things. But I don't know, there wouldn't be like a favourite monster as such. I don't know if that really works like that.
Yeah.
So I think we'll both go with Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla.
Or maybe Shelob. Is Shelob a monster or a spider?
Or some other being, I don't know.
Or a monstrous spider.
Yeah, monstrous spider.
That's what it is. Actually, unknown interest in Shelob fact. Do you want to hear it?
It's based on a real spider that J.R.R. Tolkien had in his shower.
No, that's not the fact I was going to share, actually. although I think that's true. I think he was born in South Africa and he remembers spiders from his childhood. So I think there is actually an element of truth to that. But the word Shelob means female spider.
There you go.
Right.
So there we go. She, as in she, and yeah. Lob, which is an old English word for spider. She lob. There you go.
Oh, that's cool.
That does take us quite nicely, however, into the movie that we've been watching this week, which our listeners will remember is the 2001 Peter Jackson absolute classic, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. So we went away and we watched that movie, all 3 hours of it, because we did the theatrical versions.
That's right, yeah.
I think we should address the Balrog in the room. And the Balrog in the room is that I love this movie. I love it. I think it's amazing. But I did find it quite hard work to watch all 3 hours of it. You?
I agree, yeah. I think I also love it. And for some reason, it was hard to get into. Like, fully invested anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I had to watch it in quite a number of sit-ins, I have to say. And I think that's... I don't know whether that's over-familiarity, you know. That's just a thing. I don't know. Because it's got nothing... I don't think it's anything to do with the film. I just wonder if other people out there have had a similar experience when they revisit these films.
I think it's quite interesting because there's a multitude of films that I have rewatched and know the ins and outs of. But there's something about this one. And I think this is something that I did touch upon last week. As to maybe why, definitely why I gave it the score that I did of an 8 out of 10, but maybe why I wasn't able to get into it so much.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Listen, once I was in it, I was there, you know, and you know, the last 90 minutes of it flew and I really enjoyed it, but I just think it's over familiarity. I think I've lost count of how many times I've watched this movie. But we should talk about the movie, you know, from that point of view of, you know, we watched the whole thing and so on, and really not dwell on the fact that over time, maybe a bit of familiarity makes it difficult to watch. So what you gave it a score of an 8, and we're not going to go to the end and get your other score, and that would make it quite high. Is there anything that you've seen as a kind of an initial response that would make you think, oh, my score might change for good or bad? Is there anything you kind of your immediate response to the movie?
I don't really know. See, the thing is as well is that I'm quite used to the extended editions now. So it was interesting going straight back to theatrical. And I don't know if that really changes my score in any way. But it did feel like a different experience watching the shorter version of it. There was times where I was expecting the next scene to happen and it didn't. And I was like, oh, it must be in the extended edition. But I think it's one of those really interesting concepts where if you want to sit down and watch Lord of the Rings, maybe you're watching it with someone who's never seen it before, then you can introduce them or rewatch the theatrical version. You don't have to go into so much in-depth detail. It's like if you're reading the books, for example, you can skip a few chapters because you don't need them, which mm-hmm. I think people do anyway. But it's an interesting take to have a theatrical and an extended edition. But then again, it could also completely not work at all.
Yeah, I there's always been rumours as well of an extended edition as well. Apparently there are hours and hours of footage that was never shot. I tell you what I did find, and we will get into the detail later, but I did find because I grown up with these movies throughout the last 20 years or so, and you know, for a period of time was sort of briefly obsessed with them. When I was watching it, I can't separate the fact that I know that it's a movie. It was shot. So you know, there's a scene where the hobbits are leaving Hobbiton and they're on the road, and it's where the Black Rider is. The first time you see the Black Rider, and they've fallen down a hill, and Frodo says, "Get off the road." And then there's all that kind of special effect and the leaves start blowing and stuff. So this is my example. When I'm watching that, I know, I always think to myself, oh, this was the first thing that was ever shot in the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. It was the first time that ever happened. So it's the first shot. So day one of an 18-month shoot, this is the first scene that was in the can. And they all look like 2.5 years younger than they do throughout different parts of the film, and Sean Astin's a little bit slimmer and things, and then there's another bit where you think, oh, and this bit was shot you know, 2 years after they started shooting. And so I find it really hard to separate myself watching the movie and go on a journey with the movie because of the mechanics in which it was made. And that was great. You know, there was all these DVDs that came out with the appendixes and you know, behind the scenes stuff. And that was amazing. But I don't know whether that's over time just sort of damaged your enjoyment of the movie.
I'm going to agree with that. I think I've found that a lot of the things that all of the trivia and the knowledge behind it, you know, as you're watching it. And because it's so popular and interesting to see those things, like I remember you just sitting and casually watching the behind the scenes. And now that mm-hmm. you know the ins and outs, you kind of, you know what's coming, you know how it was done. But at the same time, it's sort of a distraction when you're watching it. I know there's internet jokes everywhere, especially about the second one, where he kicks the helmet and he's broken his toe. You go, oh, yeah. Do you know he broke his toe in that scene? Or even in the first one where Sam or Sean Astin gets glass stuck in his foot. It's one of those things where you just, you know, it's like, you know the ins and outs of the movie, but you know the ins and outs of what happened behind the scenes. So it's kind of the merging world of the fantasy and the realistic, and it's, yeah, I don't know if that's what makes it hard to watch, because you can't just sit down and enjoy the film and intake the film without everything else behind it.
Yeah, and you're saying these things, and as you're saying them, I'm thinking of other things that I want to say on a similar theme. So as soon as you know that one of the ways in which they resolve the height issue of the actors was through forced perspective, as soon as you know that, you can really tell. It's the bit in the horse and cart with Gandalf and Frodo, and you're thinking, why is Frodo sat 6 feet away from him?
It was the scene with just after the fireworks where Merry and Pippin set them off and they have to do the dishes, and Gandalf's clearly not making eye contact with anyone. It just doesn't work for me. I mean, there's shots that definitely do, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, it's like what we said at the beginning of our podcast. It's like, you know, seeing how the sausage is made, as soon as you do it, you kind of ruin the sausage, right? Yeah. The other one that popped into my head was, there's the very famous line, which is a huge meme: one does not simply walk into Mordor.
Yeah.
It's a great line. And the actor, Sean Bean, sort of got his hand on his head and he's sort of looking down. And he's reading the lines off of his knee. He had the script on his knee because the script had been changing like literally every take. No, we'll do something different. And eventually just had the script on his knee. So that line, one does not simply walk into Mordor, and that look he gives is because he's reading the script on his knee. And there's just loads of little stuff like that, which is, I don't know whether it's, I don't think it ruins a movie, because now we're talking about it, in some ways it's kind of, feels like it was much more fun than it should have been.
Yeah, do you know what I've actually discovered about this? And it's going to sound sad, really. I think because I've seen it so many times on my own, watching it again on my own is really difficult, because you just want to talk about it and you want to like enjoy the little things that, you know, maybe you shouldn't just sit and laugh at it. But, you know, there's always that sense of enjoyment when you've seen it a good few times. I don't know if you felt that or...
I think so, yeah. I think it's great if you... There's a couple of ways to watch it. One with somebody that you also know enjoys it. Yeah. And you can take a break and you can talk about it and you could laugh and you say, oh, can you see that? And or otherwise with a person that's never seen it before, because then, you know, it's like, do they have a similar kind of view on it, or do they think it's silly and nonsensical or whatever? So that would be another fun way to watch it.
And then the trivia is worthwhile, because that other person doesn't know that Viggo almost got a knife to the face and hit it away with the sword.
Yeah,
you know when
Viggo's waving that fire around and he's getting the wraiths on top of Weathertop, that was the first thing he shot in the movie.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, you know, would be really cool. But it is, let's get back on track, it is a magnificent movie.
Truly, yeah.
I mean, I was struck by the cast, as we always are. We always talk about cast. I've only really got one question about the cast for you, because I think we would widely acknowledge it's amazing. But yeah. do you think that if you had to select a weak link in the cast, if you had to do it, who would you select? Who would be the one where you'd say, they're all amazing, this person is just 5% less amazing than the others? Would you have any, would there be one?
Yes. I was having a think while you were saying that. And I think it's going to sound harsh, but I think... the character's a bit wooden, so I think delivering the lines is a bit difficult, and that's probably Orlando Bloom playing Legolas. But I think it's only because he's so matter of fact and to the point sometimes that it just comes across very wooden. Whereas I know Orlando Bloom can act, it's just maybe this role, but I think maybe just the role in the first film anyway.
I think definitely in the first one, he has absolutely nothing. Legolas has to be in the first movie, but he has got nothing to do. Yeah. And you know, all of his lines are exposition. It's not really character stuff, you know. Uh-huh. It's like, but that was one thing I did notice was an awful lot of exposition in the movie. So they'll arrive at a place, so you know, and it will be, you know, this is Weathertop. Formerly it was Amon Hen. It's like, well, okay, but like, they have to explain everything, you know. Welcome to the Mines of Moria. And then they explain it. This is the walls of Moriah. This is the bridge of Khazad-dûm. And I just, I don't know whether that's a negative thing, but I did find that. But I think you're probably right about Orlando Bloom because he didn't have much to do. And he has a little bit more to do in the other movies. But actually, you're right. If even in the book, there's not much development for Legolas, really, apart from his relationship with Gimli.
Yeah, true. Exactly that, yeah. I'm going to come to my point now, which is kind of based on what you've just said as well, is that I think, and this is also why my score was an 8, is that The Fellowship of the Ring as a film is very much the world-building portion of this trilogy, where you go and you get the exposition, you get the locations, you understand the characters and what's actually going on. And it's not until The Two Towers and Return of the King where you actually feel like you're a part of that fantasy world and you understand things that are going on. And that's, for me, when it gets sort of picks up a bit. I'm not saying I hate the film. I wouldn't have given it an 8 if I didn't. But I think what holds it back is just, you need to understand this in order to get the rest of them. And I mean, I like it. There's a lot worse ways you could have done it, or you could have completely avoided the world building and it would have been a bit lifeless. But I think that's the main point for me about this one. I've always thought about that, especially in recent years. I don't know what your take would be on that.
I agree. I do agree. The other thing as well I was struck by when I was watching it was that it's not in any way really indulgent. It takes 3 hours. If you're going to tell this story, it's going to take 3 hours to do it on film. It's not like there are, you know, 5-minute shots of mountains. There's a lot of mountains in it, but it's not really lingering or anything like that. It's not slow in any way. And you know, think about what they cut out of the movie as well, or rather what they cut out of the book to sort of get through the pacing of the movie. So I don't think it's self-indulgent. I think it's a 3-hour movie because it takes 3 hours to set that world up. It's like a massive act one. Yeah. But I mean, the cast are just fantastic. I tell you what I really enjoyed this time. I've really enjoyed watching Ian Holm as Bilbo. He was, I loved watching him this time around. Such a good actor. It's great. Do you have a favourite cast member of the Fellowship?
Well, just off the back of that as well, as a kid, I was always trying to be like Frodo, and he was the cool guy that you wanted to be. But as an adult, I think I'm more like Bilbo now. I'm just tired. I want to see mountains, but I'm tired.
I want to see mountains again, Gandalf. Mountains.
Yeah.
I just thought he was really good. I do know a bit of Ian Holm, Lord of the Rings trivia. Do you know what it is?
Oh, maybe. Remind me.
He also played Frodo in a BBC adaptation
from either
the 70s or the 80s. So he's the actor that's played both Frodo and Bilbo.
Wasn't he like Peter Jackson's first and only choice as well?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
first
clever.
And only choice. No, you could talk for hours about the cast. You go through the cast and Ian McKellen as Gandalf is fantastic. The Four Hobbits, I think, are very good.
Yeah.
I did notice that Sean Astin's accent kind of goes in and out sometimes.
Me too, I noticed, for the first time.
Little thing I would pick up. Christopher Lee, again, magnificent as Saruman. And on and on and on. There's only one particular piece of acting / casting that I don't like.
Right.
Do you know what it is? It's only a small part.
Oh.
It's... Do you know what it is? Could you make a guess?
For a small part, I don't know, was it Liv Tyler, maybe?
No, it's even smaller than that. It's Haldir the Elf. I don't actually know the name of the actor that plays him. So it's the elf that they meet in Lothlorien.
That's right. Yeah.
Just seems to be the snobbiest thing that's ever existed, and delivers all. I can't even do an impression of it. I hesitate to say camp elf, but I kind of want to say it's. Well, why are you being so camp? I don't understand.
Yeah.
There you go. But no, Liv Tyler's all right as Arwen. You know, as a Tolkien purist, does she need to be in the movie? No, but you know, otherwise it would be no women, except for what's her face?
Eowyn.
Galadriel.
Oh yeah, of course. I was thinking of the sequel.
But you're right. There are three female characters.
Yeah.
In fact, have you seen that Lord of the Rings internet meme where it's all the times in which two female characters interact with each other?
Oh yeah, I have actually. Yeah.
And the only time is in the Two Towers when the mother of the girl says, "You must go, Freya." That's it. That's literally the only time in the whole time when two female characters. So I think the cast is brilliant, and I think that's fairly well established. Let's go through the list of things in this movie that are brilliant. Soundtrack.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I can never get sick of it. It's so good, especially for walking. You've got to listen to that on a long walk, haven't you?
Absolutely. That little fellowship refrain when they come over the kind of coming over the mountains.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. It's actually, just great. Yeah.
And just like every single note in that soundtrack is, I don't know, I can't say perfect. I think it probably
angelic.
Is. Well, everything, you know, so it starts off in the Shire with this kind of, you know, rustic, folky sound with the flute and everything else, and it's all massively orchestral, and it just hits every single mark.
There's no better soundtrack that you could put to this film. That's a stupid thing to say, but like, there's no way you could ever attempt to do something different with it.
Would you go out on a limb and say that it's one of the best movie soundtracks of all time ever, bar none?
Absolutely, yeah. There's nothing else that could match.
And possibly the only other movies that could match it would be The Two Towers and Return of the King.
Yeah, true.
But I think I like this one more than those two. Obviously, you know, other podcasts coming. But I think this would be my favourite.
I mean, I think they've all got really good moments, but thinking about it, I think the first one probably is the best one in terms of soundtrack, yeah.
It's definitely got the best end credits song as well.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big Into the West fan, but I can also go for a bit of Gollum's song from Two Towers.
Okay, interesting. I think
if I ever have it on shuffle, I think I usually skip May It Be.
Wow.
Is that a crime?
I don't know if it's a crime, but I think it might be. I think there are probably. I know in New Zealand you can go to prison for saying stuff like that.
Oh dear! Good thing I'm not in New Zealand then.
Shouldn't say things like that given the current climate in the world.
I got kicked out.
Should we?
For saying that?
Did you? Is that what it is? Yeah, you was revoked your thing. Other things in the movie that are brilliant?
Yeah. So the scene that you just mentioned, where they're sort of, is it a mountain or a big hill? Where all the fellowship comes out and there's that big bit of music. It took me years to notice this, and I think it's probably because it's so well done. But I have to talk about that shot because it's incredible. It shows them one by one coming through the two sort of boulders and rocks by the sides of them. But the camera moves in a way that suggests they're all different heights, which is what the characters are supposed to be. But in reality, they've got to be about the same height mostly. But the camera moves so well that it's a convincing shot, and it's so beautifully done. But as a kid, I didn't notice it. And as an adult, all I sit and do is, it's a great scene, but I watch it and I'm like, how did they possibly do this back then as well?
Yeah, and I like that shot. I know exactly what you mean. I probably didn't think that, but I've always thought that's a really effective.
Every time I go back and watch it, it's incredible.
Would you say the direction of the movie overall is brilliant?
Yeah, I think it's one of those occasions where Peter Jackson, and if there was a secondary director, I can't remember, isn't just a director, but more of an artist who knows what they're doing, is sort of putting paintbrush to canvas, or you know what I mean? And it's like every single detail possible is in it, even down to like some sort of micro movements, micro act and that kind of thing. Except one shot in particular, which is always really funny to me now that I think about it.
Which one's that?
It's the shot where they're not in the Prancing Pony, they're opposite it. All the Ringwraiths have stabbed the beds thinking the hobbits are in there. And the shot sort of, shot pulls away from the hobbits on the bed, and Elijah Wood just sort of comes into frame as the
Yeah.
camera moves past. It's really funny once you notice it. It's hard to
Yeah, it
explain it
is.
without like visualizing it
Again, that's one of those
physically.
things. It's one of those things that we were talking about at the beginning. I know how that shot works because they wanted to pull back, but they couldn't do that because the camera wouldn't be able to get through the actor Elijah Wood. It wouldn't be convincing or it wouldn't work. So basically, they said, "Right, listen, just time it beautifully. When we get to the right, just sit down on the bed, and nobody will notice." And you wouldn't notice if they hadn't told you. So I'm sat there waiting. There he is. He just sat down on the bed. There he is. I like that bit. I want to just jump back to the cast because we could and should have mentioned Viggo Mortensen as Strider slash Aragorn, son of Arathorn. We didn't mention him. Is it the best bit of casting in the history of movies? It could be the second best.
Yes. I think there's a lot of actors who I think could have been picked who wouldn't have played it quite as well or quite as convincingly. I think in that sort of role, it's far from it, but it could be the very Americanized Han Solo type hero. But Viggo Mortensen doesn't do it that way. I mean, I've just almost accidentally called him Aragorn because he's so like that character to me. But yeah, I think it could have been done badly, but they got the right actor for it.
I mean, there is the famous Hollywood anecdote, isn't there? And I'm sure everybody listens to our podcast knows this, but if you don't, we'll mention it anyway. Because he was a very late cast. They cast somebody else, and that somebody else went all the way out to New Zealand, did all the preparation for the role, did all of the stuff. And like 3 days before shooting, there's been this kind of slow burn where they'd realized they'd made a mistake. And so, you know, they basically get on the phone to Viggo. Viggo says yes because his son convinces him to do it. And off he goes.
That's
And
right.
24 hours later, he's waving a flame around on top of the watchtower of Anwen Sul. And that's it. That's the story. But you're right. I'm over exaggerating the best bit of casting because it might not be casting. He's just a very good actor who just embodied perfectly. Is it a distraction when you read the book that all you ever now see, though, are these people?
Yeah, that happens a lot because I usually read a book based on a movie after I've seen the movie. So I think it is just like these actors are cemented as these characters for me forevermore. And I think if they reboot it, it might just be the same actors as the current one. I hope they don't reboot it. But do you know what I mean? It's just those are the characters to me.
Absolutely. And I think actually we should mention that the casting, if you imagine this movie came out it kind of at the kind of birth of the internet, right? So there's not that much social media, and there's no Twitter or X or whatever. So there's nobody out there to unpick all these casting decisions. Nobody's out there saying this is a disaster, this is whatever, whatever. But I've never seen anybody say that. I've never actually seen anywhere subsequent to these movies coming out anybody really challenging the casting. And I think if this movie was coming out now, people would be all over it and say, no, this is not my person. But nobody's ever really challenged the casting of it.
People are like that though, where I think anything in the past they're just going to be happy with because it's the past, whereas now they'll just complain because they can. You see it all the time. It's completely unnecessary. It's not what this podcast is about, but I'm just making that point.
There is a parallel, isn't there? Because then the Hobbit movies came out sort of a little bit, sort of 10 or so years later, at which point there is internet. And they we knew they were making The Hobbit, but they hadn't announced the cast yet. And then people go on and say, oh, it should be X, it should be Y, it should be Z. You know, if it's not David Tennant as Frodo, then I won't go. Bilbo, rather. And then other people saying, oh, it must be Martin Freeman, he's born to play the role. And you know, and then when it is Martin Freeman, there's this great hoo-ha, and everybody goes away happy. We got really off topic there a bit, didn't we? We're not talking about the Fellowship of the Ring anymore. Is there anything in the movie? Is there anything in the movie that isn't brilliant?
Oh, I don't know. I do you know what? Something that I feel like shouldn't be brilliant anymore is the CGI, but I think it works really well still anyway as what it is because the crazy developments in like the world of computer generated imagery, which is just the long way of saying CGI. I don't know why I did that, but I think they sort of paved the way, so you can see that it's bad, but you know that what you see today is this is where it came from, really.
Yeah, you're right. Some of the CGI is a bit iffy, isn't it? But you know, you kind of let it go. And the other thing that was not brilliant was when they were clearly using the sort of body doubles of or the short body doubles of some of the actors, and you can clearly see that's just a small person wearing a mask.
Yeah, it's really weird actually, because they did the opposite in Harry Potter, where Hagrid was a big guy in a mask. But that's completely off topic.
Yeah, actually, this is interesting. This film, I think, came out either the same year or the year of Harry Potter. Are they roughly concurrent with each other?
I think they are, yeah. I think definitely Fellowship and Two Towers with Philosopher's Stone and Chamber of Secrets, yeah.
There was definitely, because I definitely remember some kind of tension, or at least kind of
Yeah.
between Potter fans and Lord of the Rings fans. It's almost like you couldn't be a fan of both of them. You had to be one or the other. And
Yeah.
Potter was the kids' movie, and this was the one for grown-up people and things like that. But I don't necessarily think that's fair, but I do remember that.
Not for me. I like both.
I'll say nothing. I think the Harry Potter movies get better
Yeah.
as they go along.
Halloween back then was tough for me.
Yeah, crikey, yeah, Halloween. So should we do the conversation about things like box office and Oscars and stuff like that? Do you know how much the film cost to make, for example?
Probably about £10, I think.
It was 40.
40 pounds,
Yeah.
wow.
No. So it's hard to do the box office for this because, well, it's not hard. You'll figure this out. So all of the movies were shot at the same time concurrently. So it's an 18 month shoot with a budget of $270 million dollars. So whole thing, all three movies cost $270 million. This movie ended up with a total gross of $887.2 million.
Wow.
But it's obviously been re-released in various versions across the world. And in all of its re-releases, it's made $887 million as well. So this is like a $1.76 billion movie overall.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
People thought the studio was mad for giving Peter Jackson this kind of fairly not unknown, but certainly not, massively. Whatever, and people thought that the studio was mad to give him 270 million, but this movie alone at the box office has made 1.7 billion. It was for quite some time the biggest selling DVD. It was for quite some time the biggest selling Blu-ray. Adding in together all of the merchandise and stuff that came out about the same time, the conservative estimate for this movie is that it brought into the studio an income of just shy of $4.2 billion, and
Wow.
that's just this movie. That's
That's
not including
incredible.
Two Towers, and it's not including. So yeah, it's and it didn't hurt Tolkien book sales either.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
It's just crazy, and just everything that came out of this kind of franchise. Now, in the end, and we'll probably do this later on, we'll do other podcasts, or whatever, but we should remember this because I reckon it's going to end up making the studio between sort of 10 and 15 million, billion rather.
Yeah.
And the actors didn't get any of that. They There was no, you'll get, there's, some of the contracts say, we don't want to give you that much money, but we'll give you some of the takings. Nope, they all just did them for
Yeah,
flat
like the
fees.
residuals and things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's there's a story come out recently in the news about I think it was Cate Blanchett said that they were just paid in sandwiches or something like that.
Yeah, she basically said she did it for nothing. Well,
Yeah.
the only person that's ever come out and talked about their salary for the movie is Sean Astin,
Right.
and the only reason I know that is because it's one of those things where I think it kind of annoyed a few people that it sort of revealed it. But he got $250,000 for all three movies. That was his salary. So that's decent, $250,000.
Yeah, I feel like in comparison to what it made, though, maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, yeah. Oscars-wise, so did it win any Oscars, do you think?
I don't know about this one. I know some of the other ones did, but I'm not sure about Fellowship.
Well, it was nominated for 11 Oscars, the Fellowship, right. and it won 4.
Oh, okay, that's not too bad.
And the ones it won for were Best Cinematography, Best Makeup, Best Original Score, it's Freudian slip there because it is sure, and Best Visual Effects. But it was also nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, and so on and so on.
Wow.
So, yeah. I think the decision had been made that they didn't want to give it Best Picture and Best Director because there were two other movies to come out, and they just didn't sort of want to peek too early on it.
Yeah, true.
But it won the BAFTA, which is the British Academy for Best Film and Best Director and things like that. And it was definitely nominated for more than it won. And I think that was mostly because people were thinking, we want to wait until the other ones come out.
Yeah, let's hang back a bit. Yeah.
Do you have any out-of-pocket takes for The Lord of the Rings? Oh, sorry, The Fellowship of the Ring.
This is a very interesting film for out-of-pocket and trivia, because as we said, we kind of know everything. And I think it's fairly well known that everybody knows everything. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I don't have nothing, basically. So I watched it on Amazon Prime, and Amazon Prime has a feature which is called X-Ray, so you can see all the behind-the-scenes and the cast and things like that. And as I was watching it, there were the obvious few that everybody knows, but there were quite a few that I didn't know and that probably shouldn't have been there.
And they were?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No. So it's about the moth with Gandalf at the top of Isengard. And it said that the moth that they used was born shortly before they filmed the scene and died the same day as they finished the scene, because obviously moths don't have a long lifespan. But I thought, good on that moth. What a great actor.
Imagine being that moth. Just imagine that for a moment. You kind of appear as this magnificent thing. You get one scene with Ian McKellen in a $4 billion movie. And then you die. What a way to go out.
That's probably the best way to do it, because it's locked in history forever, that one moth. Yeah. That's crazy. I don't know. Did you know that?
I did not know that. It's kind of sad for the moth, because he missed out on the chat show circuit. You imagine that moth could go to, you know, like when you go to what do they call these things? The get-togethers, the conventions or whatever. What do we call those things? Comic-Con and stuff like that, yeah? Comic-Con. And, you know, there's always the big Comic-Con in L.A., which has got all the cool stuff in it. And then you've got Comic-Con Connecticut, which has got some of the actors from behind the scene on Star Wars. I could just see the moth with his own table, sort of elderly moth. I was in Lord of the Rings, me. I had a scene with McKellen. You might recognise me. Yeah.
Do you think he'd have a big queue for signing and things like that? Photo ops of the moth.
Yeah, probably. Probably have a massive queue.
Nowadays you just get, my great-great-great-grandfather was in a shot with Ian McKellen. It's just a different moth.
Yeah, it's just a different moth. Absolutely, yeah. You might recognise me. I do bear a striking resemblance, although I have subsequently been 24 generations. But, he's a scene with that McKellen, I don't know why the moths are cockney. Right, it's the only voice I can do. I love that, I love that. I reckon you've nailed a thing there about Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, that people didn't know. Because I didn't know that.
I hope so, yeah.
I like that one. Any other out-of-pocket takes, bits of trivia?
Yeah, this is another one I didn't know. Dominic Monaghan, who plays Merry, wore a fat suit made of foam, which meant that he had to drink like 3 litres of water a day so that he wouldn't dehydrate. And I didn't even know that. I didn't think he would be wearing a fat suit.
No, I wonder why. Did they say why he had to have a fat suit?
It really doesn't. I see. They of all the characters in the Fellowship, I wouldn't have assumed that he would have a fat suit.
No. No, there you go. That is an interesting one. There we are.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's my last bit of trivia, which I think didn't need to be made at all, is that Sean Astin's underwater scene didn't really happen. He was filmed in a dry studio with fans, and the water effects were put in afterwards because, it isn't really obvious at all. So thanks for that
No.
bit of trivia.
Yeah, thanks for that, because we would never have known that that's not really Sean Astin underwater. By the way, how long is Frodo's arm?
Oh, it's incredibly long. That's why they cast him,
Because I have to say, Sam does look like he's quite a long way
He
under the
really
water.
is.
But bear in mind, the hobbits are only between 3 and 4 foot tall, but he's just got this massive arm that seems to go down and get him. Have you ever noticed that when Frodo drags Sam into the boat, the next scene, which is Sam saying, I'm not going to leave you, and so on and so forth,
Yeah.
he's completely dry.
It's because they didn't actually film underwater. But now it's like a weird, like you'd think he would be. Who was the script supervisor not on set that day?
There's so many goofs in this movie. You could do a whole podcast on goofs in the movie. There's the first black rider that appears from behind a tree, without actually. Have you seen that one? Yeah.
Don't
There's
think
there's
so.
so the black rider appears from behind a tree, but the way in which the tree is on the shot, you should see it before it appears from behind the tree, but you don't. So it's just
Right.
literally appears. You got Gandalf's hat, which he leaves lying around all over the place, and yet he's never without it. So
Yeah.
he leaves it in Frodo's home, and because it's on the coat hanger. And the next time you see him, he's wearing it. He wears it to go to Isengard, and obviously loses it because
Oh, yeah.
when he jumps off with the eagle. So you've got Frodo's hat that keeps coming backwards and forwards. There's so many things. There's the disappearing kitchen.
I don't think I knew that one either.
So you've got Pippin and Merry. They're doing the big dragon firework, and they do it from inside the kitchen under a
Oh,
tent,
yeah.
and you see it go up, and then the shot of them lying on the floor. The kitchen's gone. There's no barrels or anything like that, and then it reappears later.
That's
But
right,
I don't
yeah.
want to get bogged down in all these goofs, because you could spend hours and hours and hours on them, because it's so much fun as well. So, and there was a car in one of the shots that was subsubsequently taken out for the Blu-ray or DVD or Blu-ray release in
Oh
2003.
wow. Why didn't they just take the car to Mount Doom?
Well,
Is that because it got digitally edited out so they couldn't use it anymore?
I mean, there's whenever you watch it, whenever you speak to somebody who doesn't like Lord of the Rings, read the book, seen the movies, they always say this. They always have the same question: why don't they just go on the eagles? Why just ride an eagle and drop it in? I hate that.
I hate it
I've always really hated that. It always makes me want to poke that person in the eye with a pencil.
too.
Because the whole purpose of the story is it's supposed to be difficult, it's a quest, it's supposed to be a challenge, and so on. But I also think I hate them because it's probably a fairly reasonable question.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's like actual reasons as to why they shouldn't and couldn't, though.
Yeah. Let's not go into that now.
No,
That's be it. That's
that's later
another
on.
thing. It's another thing we'd be here all night about.
Something that I sort of nitpick on about this film as well is when they're in Moria and Pippin knocks over the dead dwarf down the shaft, and all of a sudden here comes the drums, here comes an entire army. Surely that dwarf was going to fall down there at some point just because of gravity, and then it would have been an entire army just would have come up for nothing.
Could you imagine being that army? Right, boys. There we go. Somebody's here. Here we go. Right, the 10,000 men or orcs. Off we go. Oh, there's nobody here. And what were they? What are they? What are they actually? What are they actually doing?
Think they're just playing cards, aren't they?
Are they literally sitting around? Just right. We've set the trap. It's going to fall off. Someone's going to knock it in. And what? And meanwhile, they're all playing cards or whatever.
What if the orcs are like filming their own Lord of the Rings?
There is actually. I think you can't get it anymore. I think it's banned. I think it was sort of decided it was illegal. There is a version of the Lord of the Rings told from the perspective of those people who are working for Sauron and Mordor.
I think I started reading that years ago.
I'll have to have a look. I'll have to look into that because that would be quite interesting, wouldn't it?
Not if it's illegal. Wink.
No. Yeah. Wink. Absolutely. Wink. One of the problems of this movie, when you come to talk about it, is you can either talk forever and ever and ever, or you can very quickly run out of things to say because there's so many things that you could say, but you know they have already been said, you know,
yeah.
reams and mountains of paper and data have been written about on these movies. And yeah, and so it's really, really hard to then kind of give a kind of objective review of the movie. In the context of our podcast, I don't think we can be objective because one of my favorite things about the Lord of the Rings thing was that you were really into it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were really into it because I was really into it or whether or not you were really into it, but it had been a thing that I'd grown up with. You know, I read The Hobbit in primary school and I'd read The Lord of the Rings for the first time when I was like 13 or 14 years old. And so I knew The Lord of the Rings. And so then to be able to have that experience to share with somebody else is really one of the things that I like most about this movie, to put the sort of personal touch on it. Is that you and I could enjoy it together.
Yeah. I don't know. I think part of it was that I enjoyed it because you enjoyed it too, but I've got a lot of fond memories of it myself. I don't think it's... I mean, like, for example, Star Trek. I was excited for that film because I knew you'd loved it, whereas I don't think I had those thoughts for this. But I think it was probably quite lucky that we both did enjoy it, really, because I was always dressing up and playing and everything... And uh-huh. Things like that. Yeah, I think it's kind of been a me and you thing.
Yeah, and but you were very young as well, so you probably weren't going to argue. For you, it was just a big adventure to go to the cinema and things. But we definitely did watch all of these movies in the cinema, and I even think we saw the extended editions of the next two, which, you know, is astonishing. I think I've told this anecdote even before on this podcast, you know, taking you to see the Two Towers extended edition and you're 5 years old or something, and the guy said, it's 4 hours, mate. You'll never sit through that. And, you know, you did and I didn't. So
yeah.
One of my favourite movie anecdotes. Is there anything else you want to say about the Fellowship of the Ring?
Nothing that springs to mind immediately. There'll probably be something that when we stop recording, I'll think of it.
Yeah. It is a movie of special magnificence. That's what I want to say. You can pick holes in it. You know, I'll freely admit it's harder to get into than it was 20 years ago. But you just can't argue with it. It's brilliantly directed. It's brilliantly scored. Well acted. It's a movie of magnificence. Well, we should probably move on to our scores now, shouldn't we?
Yeah. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I think I do want to go first.
Okay.
That sounded really forceful. I think I do want to go first. I'm happy to go first.
I have to.
I must go. No, I will go first because you asked. So I gave it 9 out of 10, right? Because it's The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. And I think I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to stick on 9. No, I don't know. It's hard because it's hard because I know at some point I'm going to have to do Two Towers and The Return of the King.
Yeah.
Which I think objectively might be better. But if I give this movie a 9, then there's something wrong with it then, right?
Yeah. I know what you mean.
So I'm going to give it, I'm going to commit myself. I'm going to give it 9.
Locking it in.
I'm locking in a 9 because the only minor criticism I've had, and this is a contradiction to something I said earlier, that it does feel a bit fluffy, overstuffed at times. You could probably lose 10 minutes of the running time in which no story has been told by some of the long shots of people walking across mountains. Now, they're amazing. I love them. They're fantastic. But they're not bringing anything to the story. So that's the reason I'm going to give it a 9. Because I just think it's slightly overstuffed. Like 0.01%.
I think it's probably a good testament to the memory score, though, that the rewatch score stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Yeah.
it's one of those movies that's just that score forever. Not in a bad way, but yeah.
Yeah.
And on that, I think the memory of it is a good one for me. I've always grown up with it. I've always liked it. So I think the same for me, really. I think I'm going to stick with an 8 out of 10 as well, but purely based on the fact that this is the part of the trilogy that's all world building and setting everything up. But it still does it in such a good way that I can sit back and enjoy it and enjoy the characters. And I think it's beautifully written. Some of the lines in there are incredible.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Something we should have mentioned. So I think, yeah, it for me, it is also an 8 out of 10. And I think it is literally just a testament to how good of a film it is that it's, even all these years later, it's still great to watch. It hasn't,
yeah.
It's aged, but it's not gone down in any estimation because of its age. I think it's probably, if you compare it to something that would come out today, it's up there with one of the greatest films of all time still. So yeah, 8 out of 10.
Okay, and yet we gave Monsters, Inc. a higher overall score. But I don't think it really works like that, does it? I don't think we're objectively saying that we think Monsters, Inc. is a better movie than The Fellowship of the Ring. Maybe we are, I don't know. We're really talking about what we remember about it and what we think about when we rewatch it. And it's I think our scores are sort of more emotional than objective, or more subjective than objective, rather. But there you go. So 9 from me and 8 from Sam, given an overall score of 8.5 to The Fellowship of the Ring, which I think is probably a little bit harsh, I don't know. But there'd be a whole raft of people out there that would give this film 0, calling it fluff and nonsense. True. And then there'd be an equal amount of people giving it 10. So it would have an average score of 5 across 1,000 people. So our score of 8.5 is bang on.
Yeah, definitely.
Before you email us and say, how dare we sully the good memory of The Fellowship of the Ring. We didn't mention the script either. I think you alluded to it, but what a good script it is as well. Yeah, we didn't mention that, but we'll give a little mention to it there because it is a very, very good script.
Before we do the one-word review, what's one line from the film that you always really like?
Wow, one line from the film that I always really, really like.
It's a really stupid way of me to word it, but what's one line from the film that resonates with you that you always remember?
Well, I mean, there's quite a lot, but you put me on the spot. One does not simply walk into Mordor.
Yeah.
I think when they form the Fellowship and Aragorn says, if by my life, you know, whatever, you have my sword, you have my bow, you have my axe, that's a good one. Gandalf's one where, which is, I can't quote it directly because I'm sort of taken slightly off guard here, but it is, so do all who wish to see, who live to see such times. But, it's not about what we do with our time. And that's a good line. There's just so many.
We've given our scores and I keep thinking of different things to talk about. I think one of the ones that like always jumps out to me is, it's really weird, but give them a moment for pity's sake. I think that's such a great line, especially from Boromir, because it's sort of, it's something that I think is still said in modern times, but it's really this big moment of, they need to keep going, but can we not just have a moment, please? We've just lost Gandalf. And I think it's so well like acted as well. But I think another one that I think is really well done is where Aragorn says, I would have gone with you to the end. That's such a great character moment. And you can feel it. You can feel the emotion.
Yeah. And the other one at the end of the movie when he says, let's go hunt some orc.
Yeah.
That's literally one of the only times. Because if you go to a cinema anywhere other than the UK, people get up and cheer and shout and clap, but we don't do that in the UK. But that's literally the only time I've ever been in the movies where people just cheered. And you sort of leave, because there's going to be a sequel, but you leave with this, I can't believe I've got to wait one more year. They're going to hunt them orc. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that scene after Moria, because I think that might be the best scene in all three. I was watching it and I was thinking, that my goodness, that's good. That might be the best single shot in all three of the movies. And there's no CGI. It's just good acting and good filmmaking. So, well, thank you for mentioning that.
I really like the way Billy Boyd, Pippin, is just in tears, because you'd blame yourself, really, because it was kind of your fault that everything happened.
Yeah, we were on the same wavelength. I thought exactly that. His they're all crying, but his anguish is because it's his fault, right? If he hadn't done that, it wouldn't have happened. And if you're the actor, that's clearly what you're thinking, to get yourself into that particular thing. Yeah, if you don't think that's the best scene in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, then do email us and let us know which one you think is better. Because I'm sure I can, but right now I can't think of a better one.
Yeah. It's got to be, there'll be something, but for now, yeah, it's that one.
Okay, so what would be your one-word review of The Fellowship of the Ring? I have a feeling this one could be quite difficult.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of words I do want to use. There's one word in particular that comes to mind, but it's more of a genre than a description or a one-word review. So I'm going to kind of sort of trick it in a way and say fantastic.
Oh, that's obviously good.
The fantasy is the part that I wanted to go.
I like that. That's really good. I think I'll go with, crikey, one word. I did have one and it's just completely gone. I'm going to go with groundbreaking.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it was, I think, at the time. I think it was for modern cinema what Star Wars was for the cinema of the 80s, the 90s. I think this is the game changer for modern cinema. At this point, everybody goes, oh my good heavens, they've done this down in New Zealand. And we didn't talk about location either. What a magnificent location New Zealand is.
We are going to need an extended edition, aren't we?
We are. Oh, we just tag this stuff on at the end. People still be listening.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. So, movie for next week, your choice. What will it be?
It is my choice, yeah. So we've just started the beginning of a new trilogy. I think it's time to end a trilogy.
Uh-oh.
So what I'm going to do is we're going to go for Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Quite a contrast, very similar in terms of popularity. But I think it's time. I think I'm ready to watch it.
Yeah, me too. Okay, excellent. I'm going to sum up my memory of this in the shortest way that I can. My memory of this movie is that it was, by some significant degree, the best of the three Star Wars prequels by an enormous amount. And I've been less than kind about the Star Wars prequels on this podcast. And some people have sort of told me I'm far too harsh, and I've had messages from people saying, you're so mean, I love Jar Jar and things like that. But I think this is, by some significant degree, the best of the prequel trilogy. And I actually think it could, in my view, be in the top three Star Wars movies anyway.
Wow.
Controversial.
So 2 out of 10.
No, I'm going to give it 7 out of 10.
Okay, wow. Good score. Similar with me. I think this is one where I do actually remember going to the cinema that day to see it. I think we saw it on the release day itself. You picked me up after school and we went to see it, and I was hyped is the word I think people use. But this was a big one for me. I remember all the sort of the magazine articles coming out. I think I had a collection. There's all the toys, absolutely. But it was... In a way, it's like the end of the childhood, because, you know, here's the last film in the trilogy at that time, or the saga at that time. But I really like it, and in recent years, I've still enjoyed it. I think, for me, it's also probably the best out of the prequel trilogy. So to keep it as short as I can, I think I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 again, just because of how much I like it. Like, it's not a perfect film, but that's not the point, really.
That's very good. You've given the same score to Revenge of the Sith as you gave to The Fellowship of the Ring.
That also might be a crime in New Zealand.
I think it probably is. I think it probably is, but there you go. Yeah. Okay, so overall score for Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, is 7.5. That's fair enough. I'd be happy with that. Yeah. Just one I'm quite looking forward to going off to watch today. It's not really a day of anything today, unless you're in the UK and you got your A-level results today.
That's true, yeah. I know yesterday was International Lizard Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should have done. We should have recorded on International Lizard Day.
Yeah, probably. Because of all of the lizards in Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, there's at least one. No, there are none. There's a great Tolkien anecdote to share here. So
okay.
At the end there, because you've reminded me of lizards, and it's broadly related to the fact that we have been talking about the Fellowship of the Ring, and also broadly related to the fact that we should have mentioned that it was Tolkien at some point in the entire thing, at least as providing the source material. But there's he had an issue with the copyright of the Lord of the Rings trilogy in the United States of America. For some reason, there was a legal loophole that meant that anybody could publish it. So it was published by a group called Ace Books, and they published their own sort of non Tolkien estate copy. And anyway, there was a court case, and eventually he wins the court case, and all the Ace books are incinerated unless they've already been solved. They're quite collectible now, the Ace versions. So anyway, Ballantine's books, who then had the copyright, they went away and they had to reproduce it. And so they did three books, and they did three different covers, and there were ostriches. Ostrich, I can't say the word. Ostriches on the front cover. And Tolkien wrote to the publisher and saying, I can't believe you almost certainly have not read this book. There are no ostriches whatsoever at any point in the trilogy to this and so on. But yeah, so if you're out there and you've listened this far into the podcast, just Google the Ballantine's editions, and there's just weird ostriches on the cover.
That's funny.
So yeah, and on that ostrich bombshell, I think we should close with a shout out to Professor Tolkien for writing the Lord of the Rings in the first place.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for listening. If you've got this far, we've enjoyed talking about the movie. We hope you have enjoyed listening to us talk about the movie. We'll be back next week with The Revenge of the Sith. But for now, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful? Or did they change history?